One day, Charlene Meyer and I were having a conversation. Charlene is the pastor's wife at East Hill Friends Church down in Kent. And we were talking about potluck meals at a church, or at our churches, I should say. And we talked about how we had both been to church meals where there wasn't really enough food for everyone, and how we had both hung back and waited for others to go through the line first, and how we had both taken very little on our plate, wanting to leave food for everyone else. And she said, Charlene said that her response was to double what she prepared the next time, to take twice as much food and make up the difference herself. I said I couldn't do that. Not and prepare a message on Sunday morning and get here and be ready with all the other things that I do on Sunday morning. And so I prayed the loaves and fish prayer. She persisted in talking about how she had even tripled the amount of food that she had brought, and how frustrating it was that other people didn't seem to notice and just ate bountifully of all the food that she worked so hard to bring. And I said, I prayed the loaves and fish prayers, and it seemed like we always had enough. There were a few more rounds of that conversation as we talked back and forth, and the pattern continued. And ultimately, she looked at me and she said, maybe I should have prayed. It seemed like it was a lot more effective than just working hard to make up the difference. Well, this story, this loaves and fish story that I refer to when I talk about the loaves and fish prayer is found in John chapter 6, the first 15 verses, and I'm just going to read it. After this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, where are we to buy bread for these people to eat? He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 6 months' wages wouldn't buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, well, there is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they among so many people? And Jesus said, make the people sit down. Now there was a great deal of grass in the place, so that they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, gather up the fragments left over, so that nothing may be lost. So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they began to say, this is indeed the prophet who has come into the world. When Jesus realized that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he withdrew again to the mountain by himself. You know, the reality is that way too often we focus on our lack, what we don't have, what we need, our shortage, even our desperation. Whereas it seems that Jesus takes what we do have and begins there. It's as if we come to Jesus with what we have in our hands, however meagre it is, and it's really up to Jesus. It's up to Jesus to take that which we bring and give to Jesus and make something of it. The reality is our culture teaches us that it's all up to you, that there isn't enough. And that you need to work hard to claim that which is yours and protect it from anyone else, even hoard it, so that you will have enough. And the trouble is that we do that, and there's no end to the sense of protection that we need to do, because we never really feel confident that we have enough. How much is enough? How much will keep me safe through all my years until I die? How much will provide for every need that might come up that I don't know about yet? How much do I have enough? And the pressure to earn more, to make more, to save more, to do all of those things is ground into us. Time and time again, do you have enough resources to retire? Probably not. If you ask the professionals, they'll tell you you need more. We're also very practical. What I need would be so impossible that there's no point in asking. I mean, let's get real here. Like Philip, we say 6 months' wages wouldn't buy enough bread, let alone fish and a bountiful meal that we might want to give people. 6 months' wages wouldn't buy enough bread for each one of them to get a little. So what's the point? The facts are the facts, and that's that. End of statement. But the truth is that Jesus isn't limited by our sense of impossibilities. And the way forward may not look anything like we anticipate. Besides, it is Jesus who will make something of who and what we are and what we bring. So what can we learn from this story? First of all, I think we learn that God is plenty. I've said for years that in God, we are enough. We have everything that we need to be the people that God is calling us to be. But as I sat with this miracle and I thought about it, really that God has expanded my thinking, and that God is more than just enough, because God is plenty. God is plenty for everything that we really need. In God, we are plenty, and we're actually living that truth. You know, this building is just enough. We have a building that we own free and clear. We have a building in which we can gather. And yes, there are things that we might wish were different, but it is adequate in the sense that it is a place that we can gather. But God is gracing us with this amazing plenty of this new place, this new building that we will move to. And it is incredibly generous of God to give us this thing that we didn't set out to seek, and we have been willing to say, okay, we'll stay here, it's fine, multiple times along the way. But God continues to persist in giving us this gift that is amazing. Another thing we learn is that Jesus cares about hospitality and that people are fed. That he really had compassion on that crowd. He didn't have to do that. I think that no one that came that day really expected that they were going to get a meal provided for them. They would have taken care of themselves. If they had a meal with them, they would have eaten it. And probably many people did have a meal with them. If not, they would have done what they needed to do to take care of themselves. But Jesus reached out with this compassion and hospitality. And I think it's an invitation to us that we too can live into our God-given purposes out of a sense of plenty and of hospitality. That we have a welcoming and a generous spirit, rather than being defined by practical limits. Oh, we don't have enough, we can't do that. That we can respond out of generosity and grace. And that we have an opportunity to set the table in a way that people know who Jesus is. And they know the truth about Jesus and how Jesus graces our lives. Also, I think this kind of hospitality and generosity sparks generosity in others. It's my guess that those who brought their lunch that day actually shared it. As the baskets were being passed out, they didn't say, oh no, I got my own, just let it go. But that they added theirs, and it was kind of everybody shared around. And I know when people have been generous with me, really generous with me, it sparks in me a sense that I want to be generous with others. And that, I don't have to split every hair in a way that is exactly even. That I can simply be generous and gracious. And we begin to believe that there will be enough. And I don't have to hoard what I have. That in Christ there is enough. The truth is we start with what we have, even if it is ridiculously inadequate by our standards. Imagine if Andrew had come to Jesus that day and says, I've scouted the crowd, and there's a couple of hundred people that brought their lunches. And they're all pretty small, but I think if I ask them that they'll share and we can divvy it up and everybody could get a bite to eat. Maybe that would be okay. But he didn't do that. He simply brought what he had. This boy's lunch, 5 loaves, 2 fish, which was not enough. It was hardly enough to feed one person, let alone to share with a crowd. But he brought what he had. We tell the truth, and we have to start there. We give what we have, even if it's ridiculously inadequate by our standards. We give what we have. We bring what we have. We tell the truth about who we are, what we can do, what we can't do. We bring all of that and lay it out before Jesus and say, now what? We invite Jesus to enter into that with us, to enter into this situation, whatever it is. And together, we figure out the next step. Jesus blessed a child's small lunch, and in this blessing, the small amount of food, it was changed. You know, our temptation is to curse the shortage, to curse the inadequate resources. I don't have enough. Why doesn't God ever take care of me? If only, why do those people over there in that big fancy house or whatever have the kinds of resources that I need? And they squander them. And we get wrapped up in the injustice of it all. The problem with that is that it shrinks our resources even further. It has the counter effect to what we want. When we focus on our lack, we don't have enough. Why do they have more? What is wrong? And we find ourselves in this really stuck place. On the other hand, blessings change and empower us. And they change and empower our resources. As we bless what we have and give of it freely, even blessing the bills that we have to pay, it's amazing how that does its good work. And the blessing returns to us in ways that we don't expect. And so there's power in blessing. There's power in cursing and blessing. I want the blessing power, not the cursing power, to take hold. And so we bless that which we do. It's one reason that we bless people and bless our efforts here among us is because in so doing, we empower people to go forth in the fullness of God's grace and presence. And blessing changes us. It does a new work inside of us. It opens new possibilities. It gives us next steps. The miracle of multiplication happens in the passing out of baskets of food. Often the truth is that we want to see it multiplied before we'll believe it. Okay, when you give me all the options that I think I need, or you give me all the money I think I need, or you give me all the whatever it is that I think I need, then I can believe that there will be enough for me to go forward. But I think one of the things we learn about this story is that I don't think Jesus stood there and blessed the food and watched mountains of it grow and then took it and passed it out. It appears to me when I read the story that he blessed it and passed it. And in the passing, it was enough. And there was more. And it didn't run out. Miracles happen as we're faithful to live into the next step, doing the very thing that God puts in front of us. And as we're faithful to that next piece, there's the next step and the next resource that we need. But it's as we move forward doing that which we're given, even if it doesn't make sense, even if it doesn't seem like enough, as we step into this peace, then the next opens and the next opens and it goes forth. As we're faithful and fruit and doing ministry, God's miracle of multiplication and life happens in our presence. You know, the truth is that we often don't even recognize that a miracle has happened until the remaining baskets are collected up afterwards. Oh, okay, God, wow, thank you, Jesus. You just provided. I didn't realize that when I took the first steps that you were answering the prayer of my heart. But now, in retrospect, looking back, I can see that you absolutely met my need. And you met my need in time. God's provision and care are given in a multitude of unique ways. Twice, Jesus fed the crowds with a small lunch, once for 5,000 and once for 4,000. And God fed the Israelites with manna when they were in the wilderness. Elijah was fed by ravens during a drought. And there's a story then about the widow's oil and flour that didn't run out until the drought was over. Or a different widow that was desperate and ready to take her own life because she didn't have anything and could not support herself, and her last jar of oil was all she had left, and she was told to take it and pour it into another jar and keep pouring it, and she poured it until there were no more jars to fill up with oil, and then she could sell it and feed her family and meet her needs. In my experience, asking God to provide in the same way that He's done it before really doesn't work. It's about trusting God to do what God's going to do this time. It's about bringing what I have, no matter how ridiculously small, and giving it to Jesus and saying, now what? Now what do I do? You tell me. Now what are we going to do? How are we going to move forward in this situation? But to assume that will happen a certain way because it happened that way last time or for someone else only gets us caught in the sense of expectations that it has to be a certain way. And it isn't because God can't do it that same way, but my experience is that God meets each situation uniquely in a different way. And we trust and follow those leadings as they come and wait and see how God will answer this time. Also, it was really easy for me to see that I couldn't just make up the food at a community meal when we gathered together to eat together by bringing more food. Cooking is not my forte in the first place. And in the second place, I just didn't have enough bandwidth to get all of that done and ready for Sunday morning. So it was really clear that was something I couldn't do, and I had to pray about it. But you know, the truth is there are other areas where I'm tempted to take over and just do it because I can. And I take over for God and I take over for others. I don't ask for help. I can do it, therefore I do it. And the ministry and friends are often good at saying, is that really yours to do? Oh, well, maybe not. I think it's a journey for all of us, and we continually learn not to take more on more than is ours to do, and to listen with God. Is this mine or is this not mine? And some things we need to lay down. We deprive others from doing them if we always are the one that does it all. And we trust God. We trust God to make it all come together and to be okay. I have to give up the it's all up to me thinking. Whether it be financially or in tasks that I'm to do, numerous ways in every part of my life and begin to trust God, not just in those places where it's really obvious that I can't do a blooming thing about it, but that in everything I come to God and say, is this mine? Is this yours? Is this someone else's? How am I to respond here and trust God in that? To learn that there's absolutely nothing that we can't take to God. And that in everything, absolutely everything, we come before God as we are, we bring what we have, and we tell the truth. And then we trust God to do something with it. And we wait for leading. And God will be faithful as we are faithful. Let's wait in open worship as we listen to God who is present, who loves to bless us with loaves and fish blessings. May we listen. May we trust.